I am happy to be here this evening. As you can well imagine, there's no place I would rather be. I want to thank the American Library Association for celebrating children's books in this manner, as it has been doing since the inception of the Newbery Medal 76 years ago. And I especially want to thank the members of the Laura Ingalls Wilder Committee for recognizing my books. It's an extraordinary honor, and I accept it gratefully. I don't mind telling you that this is one of the very, very great moments of my life. Most of you are familiar with the time-honored rituals that go along with these awards. The committees meeting secretly through the night behind closed doors, the mounting suspense, and finally the early morning phone calls to the winners, followed by the public announcements and lots of excitement. As you know, the deliberations of the Newbery and Caldecott committees are often accompanied by rumors, by conjectures and speculation, even by straw polls, and the winners, when announced, are not always unexpected. That's not the case with the Laura Ingalls Wilder Committee, which meets not just behind closed doors, but apparently with the lights dimmed. When it comes to closely guarded secrecy, the Wilder Committee should be giving lessons to the Central Intelligence Agency. So when I tell you that this award came out of the blue as a stunning surprise, please believe me. I was not thinking about awards or about the ALA midwinter meeting when my phone rang on the morning of January 12th. I was trying to write my next sentence, and I looked at that ringing phone with some annoyance. Now, when you pick up the receiver and then, after a pause, hear an unfamiliar voice asking for you by your full name, what do you expect? I assumed, as anyone would, that this was a solicitation call, and at 9:30 in the morning. Thank heavens I didn't say, please take my name off your calling list. Before I could say anything, the caller identified herself as Kathy East, chair of the 1998 Wilder Committee. So yes, this award came as a complete surprise, as one of those wonderful moments when your heart leaps joyfully into your mouth and leaves you speechless. But alas, there is no such thing as unalloyed joy. When I hung up after stuttering my thanks, I realized I would have to write a speech, a daunting prospect when you've been speaking about your work and yourself for years, and feel certain that you have nothing left to say, that by now they've heard it all. When you are honored for a particular book, you can talk about that one book when you give thanks, about its inspiration, its challenges, and so on. It's quite a different matter when you're told that you're being honored for a body of work. What an expression, a body of work. It sounds as though you are ready to be embalmed. My body of work goes back 37 years to the publication of my first book by Holiday House in 1961. Since then, I've been lucky enough to spend my working life exploring subjects that interest me and that I hope and believe will interest my readers. Recently, I've enjoyed writing about men and women I admire for some reason, people whose lives have something to tell us, perhaps, about leading our own lives. If you want to know who my heroes are, take a look at my books. I was drawn to Eleanor Roosevelt because of the quality of her heart, to Crazy Horse because of his courage and his uncompromising integrity, to Abraham Lincoln because of his spirit of forgiveness, and not the least because he wrote his own speeches. I've always been a history buff. I believe that a book of history or biography can carry within its pages a certain magical power. It can convey all the life and immediacy of great fiction while retaining the authenticity, the additional power, of truth. Biographies, in particular, have always commanded a wide audience among readers of all ages. They appeal to us because we have an insatiable hunger for stories about other people, whether it be the latest gossip or the life of Samuel Johnson. And those biographical subjects who have had to struggle the hardest are the ones who engage our imaginations most deeply. For children especially, a book of history or biography offers the satisfaction of knowing that the people and events portrayed are really real. Writing for that audience of impressionable young readers imposes a special responsibility. You must keep in mind that your book may be the first they have ever read on that particular subject. They will come to it with great expectations, and if you do a good job as author, your book may still be alive in their memories 50 years from now. A quiet children's book can have an impact on the future in ways that few bestsellers can. All of us here know that. To a child, anything that happened before he or she was born is history, ancient history. What kid hasn't asked, "Tell me about the olden days, Mom?" Children have a basic human need to know how their world came into being. In every culture, you find children listening avidly to stories about the past. A knowledge of the past is part of every child's birthright. One reason for the enduring appeal of Little House on the Prairie and other books by Laura Ingalls Wilder is that they combine vivid history with a compelling story. Someone once asked Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel, why he chose to write for children, and he replied, "I'd rather write for kids. They're more appreciative. Adults are obsolete children, and I say, to hell with them." It's certainly true that kids are the most appreciative and responsive audience any author could hope for. Who else but a writer of children's books would receive a letter like this? "Dear Mr. Friedman, I read Cowboys of the Wild West, and I want to know where you get such good ideas. Did you get all your information from older cowboys, or are you a cowboy yourself? If I can convince that reader that I am a cowboy, then I must have written a very persuasive book." My favorite question from a reader, and forgive me if you've heard this, but with this audience I can't resist, came from a fifth grader in Indiana who wrote, "Dear Mr. Friedman, I read your biography of Abraham Lincoln and liked it very much. Did you take the photographs yourself?" That boy came away from my book with the feeling that Abraham Lincoln was a real person who must have lived the day before yesterday. He was someone whom I might have known. That's always my objective, to make the past seem real, to breathe life and meaning into people and events that are dead and gone. Nonfiction books for children have changed dramatically in both content and form since I've been working in the field. Today, they have to be better than ever. They have to compete for the reader's affections with technological wonders like cable television, video games, and personal computers. They have to win over youngsters who are in mortal danger of succumbing to stimulus stupefaction and to uncontrollable attention drift. The antidote is reading, the quiet, contemplative, warmly satisfying act of reading. When I published my first books in the early 1960s, children were still being shielded from the real world to a far greater extent than they are today. Today, we have the freedom and the responsibility to write about a great deal more. We can recognize life's complexities and ambiguities. We can encourage children to ask questions. The Story of Mankind by Hendrik Van Loon, winner of the first Newbery Medal in 1922, would be a very different book if it were written today. Telling that story, the story of humankind, honestly, in the light of today's values and understanding, is a challenge for anyone who cherishes children, who wants to encourage their idealism and shield them from cynicism, and yet still give them forthright history. When I received the Newbery Medal in 1988, I expressed my thanks to a long list of people whose support and friendship over the years have meant so much to me. It is a measure of the enduring sense of community in the children's book field that I can stand here this evening and thank those very same people again, those who are still with us. Because the passage of 10 years has only strengthened the bonds of friendship and affection that I feel toward every one of them. To my Newbery thank you list of 10 years ago, I now want to add Dorothy Briley, my wise and wonderful editor at Clarion Books, and Regina Griffin, my stimulating new editor at Holiday House. One of my favorite quotations comes from Orville Wright. It refers to the Wright brothers' 1901 wind tunnel experiments, which provided the scientific data they needed to build their first successful airplane. For many weeks, they were absorbed in painstaking and systematic lab work, testing, measuring, calculating. The work was tedious. It was repetitious. But they were exploring unknown territory, and they would look back on those weeks as a time of great excitement when each new day promised discoveries waiting to be made. Wilbur and I could hardly wait for morning to come, Orville recalled, to get at something that interested us. That's happiness, he said. After nearly 4 decades of writing for children, I can hardly wait for morning to come to get on with my latest book. That's happiness, too, and I thank all of you so very much for making that possible.